Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, round two. We're back.
Are we back?
Are we back? I was having technical difficulty there, folks, but I'm back. Anyway, my name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation. And I tried to do this already once, and I'm on round two here. So tonight I have a guest, Nathan, here beside me as well. I'm going to try this one more time again and say this too as well. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just here sharing my own healing experiences from childhood sexual abuse and my recovery experience. And folks, I think I'm live. I'll know in a sec. This is really frustrating. But anyway, I'm going to get back. Someone's going to get back to me in a second. Hopefully we're all right. I'm broadcasting live from 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard, Western Toronto, Old Etobicoke, as I like to always say, which it is. It's a beautiful place down here, isn't it?
Beautiful place.
And let me see. Do I have an answer? Oh, we're on air now.
Oh, we're back.
Okay, technical difficulty. You got to love that. Okay, so we're working now, so that's great. Okay, so second time. It's funny, you know, because I did this with Deb back before Christmas. I had the same problem. So I had to shut it all down just like we just did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got back on, redid it again, and then it worked again. So I know it's working, so this doesn't help with the not being able to hear it, right?
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, it doesn't help either because when I'm talking in the microphone, I can't see from the other end.
Yeah, there's not really much to
tell
if you're on or not.
No, there's not really at all. But anyway, folks, we're back, we're live, we're working. I have Nathan here as my guest. So I'm going to try this from the beginning now again. And please be patient with me. So Nathan is ever so grateful, so wonderful to come in here and talk about his healing journey and from childhood sexual abuse. And I just went right off when we started the last time and I asked him about his story. So we're going to try this again.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name's Nathan. I grew up in a small town about 4 hours from here. Grew up in a house. I have nine brothers and sisters.
Wow, big family.
Huge family. And we lived in a small house. It was a two-bedroom house. Not really much at all. So all the kids were in one room and parents had their own room. But anyways, my father, turns out, is a pedophile. And growing up, I kind of thought that was normal, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I try to think back, and my first memory I can pull up out of my head is of abuse. So growing up, I don't think there's anything really different about my family. But even growing up, we knew enough to know better than to say anything. I remember once as a kid, like half jokingly, half serious, that I'm going to tell someone. I remember being picked up and thrown against the wall.
Mm.
So that was the last time I said anything like that. You know, fast forward into when I'm a teenager. Myself, I was always too scared to look for help or to tell anyone. I was physically thrown against the wall. But my sister ended up telling her teacher at the time, grade 7, about what was going on. And my father was arrested, taken out of the house. And, you know, from there, it was horrible. My mom knew the abuse was going on. I found out later, but she was too scared to move on, mm-hmm. to say anything because my father's a provider. What is she going to do? So in the end, my older brother ended up in jail. I went to jail. My sister, my younger sister, ended up killing herself. And the rest of my brothers and sisters were put into foster care. Only recently did I reconnect with everyone. But from there, like, I was 15, you know, when everything started coming out, when all the family got completely split up, and I was basically on my own. So, you know, I would work wherever I could. I didn't finish high school. I dropped out of high school. Ended up doing, like, running with the wrong crowds. Mm. Ended up in a gang. Ended up in jail.
Mm.
Just doing horrible things. You know, stealing from everyone. Mm. Not really...
caring, right?
Not caring about anyone, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, well, by the time I was around 20, you know, I didn't have a high school education. I worked at a factory. I was making minimum wage, which is $7.85 an hour, something like that.
Yeah, at that point.
You know, trying to live. And still, the people that I was hanging around with were still going to jail to come out. You know, around that time, one of them went to jail for murder. And I finally had enough. I had to cut all ties, sold everything I had, got into packed a garbage bag, and left town. Didn't know where I was going. Didn't know where I was going to end up, what I was going to do, but I knew that I couldn't stay there.
Mm.
I ended up going to Guelph, not for anything really. I didn't know anyone in Guelph. It was just someplace to go. And, you know, I found a job, started working, got a place, was able to, you know, take care of myself a little bit. In Guelph is where I met my partner, who I've been married to for 12 years now.
Wow.
We were just kids. Mm. just kids. And, you know, I had never really shared or opened up or talked about what had happened to me as a child because of shame, because I was embarrassed, because it turns out not every family's like that. You know, and rightfully so. Mm. So I met my wife. I ended up opening up, talking to her after my second suicide attempt at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We had just started dating, and it had nothing to do with her. I was so broken and crushed on the inside. She found me. She found me, brought me to the hospital, and I finally started talking to people. I finally started accepting, you know, that this did happen to me. It's not right.
Mm-hmm.
Now what? You know, from there, finally started talking to professionals, started talking to psychiatrists. And still, what I thought they were saying was hokey, right? They're telling me, you know, you need to find your inner child and tell your inner child it's okay.
That was hokey, yeah.
I did at first. Mm. At first, when I first started thinking about it, what do you mean find my inner child?
Mm.
Like,
it's a funny line to start off with, though, considering what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Considering what we do, I had no idea at that time that inner child is profound.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. But anyways, so I'm with my wife. I'm again working at a job. I'm doing more maintenance in the factory, mm-hmm. which is good. That's something I like doing. I
hands on, right?
Very hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And in talking to my wife, you know, what are we going to do? You know, she is very educated. She has a degree in psychology. She just finished her master's in disability studies. She's talking about getting a PhD, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am, this kid who, with no education, all screwed up, you know, doesn't want to live. What, like, I didn't understand it at the time. Why me?
Yeah, why you?
Why me?
Mm.
You know, here is this person who has all this going for her.
Mm.
Why why stop to help, you know, another broken or a broken person? But, you know, over time, I ended up going back to school. I finished high school. After that, I went to Humber College, where I did a program in industrial maintenance. You know, I graduated from Humber with honors because I was paying for class, for school at that point. So I put everything I had into it. Graduated from Humber, started an apprenticeship as a millwright. You know, finished that apprenticeship and went to another company and started a second apprenticeship as an elevating device mechanic. And then from there, I now run an apprenticeship program where I'm, you know, helping other young people
get started, right?
Get started.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause not, I mean, it's true for myself. I didn't have those sort of helping hands when I was younger. None whatsoever, right?
Yeah. That I, you know, people that care and people, you know, that take the time to actually listen. That's huge. You know, because, you know, you can't expect to be fixed, right? There is no fix, right? Myself personally, like, I kind of am how I am, and I've learned how to, you know, manage myself, manage these feelings that I have, kind of, you know, to talk about what's on my mind, to communicate, you know, and to approach with honesty.
So can I ask you a question? When did you figure that out, that you could do that? That speaking part, the talking part, being able to do that?
I can't put my hand on it.
Hand on?
No, I can't put my finger on it. I know I was horrible, and just years and years and years of wanting to do something, can't do anything, wanting to, you know, to find my voice. But the voice inside of my head pushes me down, tells me, no, you're stupid. You can't do that. What do you think you're doing? You don't even have a high school education. You know, you grew up thinking that child abuse is okay. What the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Right? But that's my inner saboteur that is just always on me. It took me a long time to learn how to kind of quiet him down.
So does the self-sabotage ever come up behind you and give you a little smack from time to time?
Always.
Say, yeah, I'm still here.
Always.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But you're more aware of that now.
Yes.
And well, as like myself, and whenever it does come behind me, I can smack it back.
Yeah.
You know, pardon the way I put it, but that's really what it is.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
When I first started running training courses, running any kind of classroom, you know, I would get up in front of a class and I know what I'm talking about, but my mind would go blank. And then there's this voice in my head going, I told you, you're an idiot. But, you know, you make your mistakes and you learn. You know, and just keep going, because that little bastard in my head, he doesn't know. he's not going to stop me.
Yeah, that I guess that's probably I can speak for myself. I know learning these things through my recovery was or even in the beginning was a really, really big task for me to try to figure that out. It wasn't until I came here that I really figured that out.
Yeah.
So I tried putting those pieces together. But so before you came here, were you you mentioned that you made the suicide attempt.
Yeah.
And how did the help kind of start from there? Like you mentioned your wife now.
Yeah.
Being as she is. So how did it come about to get you to here, or did you do something before you came here?
Before I came here, I went to was sent to Women's College. I was sent to a few other hospitals to programs, and this was 10 years ago, more than that. And when I get into the group, you know, one of the people who's running the group says, what are you doing here? So what do you mean, what am I doing here? Like, well, this is a group for women. Like, this kind of thing, like, this doesn't really happen to men. What do you mean?
Well, Well, I was a boy, right?
Yeah. So there was nothing, absolutely nothing in the city.
Yeah.
And I think it was my doctor who had heard something about this this gatehouse thing, you know, kind of out in Etobicoke. You know, go see them, see what they're about. So I went through the interview and was accepted to do phase one. Came in to do phase one. I made it I made it till inner child.
Week number six.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there in inner child. This is hokey bullshit. Like, this is stupid. I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
So I left. Yeah. I didn't come back. I left and I dropped out of the program. Mm. Things were still going on in my head. I listened to my inner self telling me, like, this, you don't need this.
Mm.
This isn't what you need. So I left. Came back a couple years later after even more, you know, not having worked on anything, kind of just wallowing in my own misery.
Mm.
You know, and I came back to do phase one a second time. Thankfully, that time I stayed.
Stayed with it.
Yeah. Went through the entire program and left the program, you know, not only feeling like I kind of found that little spark of my voice, but I had met other men who were going through the same thing that I am, you know, not the same thing per se, but the same type of experience.
Same type of experiences, yeah.
You know, we talk, you know, I deal with my emotions by getting high. Well, hey, so do I.
Or drunk.
Guess what? Or drunk, or any number of things. I had so many talking to individuals who have been through this, and there are so many commonalities, you know, between how we deal. So I finished phase one, came back, I did phase two. And then after that, I had signed up to do the facilitator training. And I facilitate phase one now here at the Gatehouse. Soon to be facilitating phase two here at the Gatehouse.
Are you coming to do the training on the 8th?
Yeah.
I'll see you there because I'll be doing the training.
Oh, perfect.
Along with Maria, Paula, and Jay, the four of us, we do the training for the phase two.
Okay.
So it'll be awesome. So I'm curious, though. When you came back the second time, when you got to the inner child again, week number six, so what changed from the last time, from the first time you came?
What changed from last time is I needed to open up. I needed to, you know, let go of some of the bindings that were holding me back.
Are you able to describe some of those bindings?
You know, just my inner self, my guilt.
And it really makes it hard too, because we being men as we are, we don't always, this is probably the only place I can ever think of, other than being drunk with somebody and a high or whatever with another male or other men, where they actually will sit down and talk about their personal feelings. But that's only to a certain degree, because I've met other men, they get really drunk and high, they don't talk about their personal feelings. They want to scrap, or they want to do this, or they want to do that, or it's just not macho, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
it's not manly, you know, and it doesn't fall in the so-called stereotypical man-like sort of behaviors.
Yeah,
if I can put it in that terminology.
Yep.
Right.
I get the whole macho, you know, the I'm stronger than this.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to throw off those weights. You know, in phase one now, I encourage our participants, you know, to be their authentic selves, no matter what it is. You know, whatever weird thing you're doing, that's what makes you.
Yeah. But really hard, though, because, you know, being in a world that we live in, men are supposed to be the so-called status quo of, you know, not chirping about, you know, being in a bad place.
Yep.
And
suck it up.
Walk it off. And, you know, and there's that's still taught to a certain degree today.
Yeah.
And although I do feel that it is changing. You know, that's just for, keeping no disrespect, but even for girls too, that's even changing as far as the dialogue is concerned about being able to talk about it. Never mind just being a macho thing, but overall, harder for men because the way we were, what was instilled to us. I'm so old school, like this would never have been talked about. I know I talked about it once when I was very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
It was swept under the carpet. So deep under the carpet, it fell into the basement.
Yeah.
And never came out till I came here.
Because the entire family's ashamed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And it was never wasn't a family member.
Yeah.
Friends of the family.
Yeah.
Right. So I can really, really relate to what you're talking about, that craziness of, you know, being in a group of men and then, we're talking about our feelings and, where do you draw the line when you talk about your feelings as far as a man is concerned, where it doesn't interfere with your ego being a man? Where do you draw the line? Well, I figured that out, but I'm curious. What do you think of that thought?
What do you mean?
Where would you draw the line? Well, you have drawn the line because you were here and you're helping yourself. But part of that, you wouldn't have done that.
I wouldn't have done that. I would have just
turned off, right?
Yeah, I would have just gone doing the same, coping in the same ways that I was coping before, where you know holding everything in, and then you end up. It's going to come out.
Yes.
Right. No matter, you can try to stuff it down as far as you want.
Yeah.
It's going to come out.
Yeah. And it's going to
come out on the wrong person who has nothing to do
with your experiences.
Yep.
Yeah. And I've done it myself.
Yeah. Me too.
Right. I've gone to jail for it too.
Yeah.
Right. I even got beat up a few times from it too.
Yep.
Because didn't keep my mouth shut. Just went ahead and did it and.
Yep.
Didn't care really about the consequences.
Because for me at that time, you know, I didn't care about the consequences because I didn't even care about living.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, you know, I feel better because I've let all this out, but now I've caused all this other turmoil. And I don't even feel better.
No.
You feel worse, actually.
Yeah, you feel worse. Yeah. That pretty much sums it up. Yeah, you do something, and it's not like we're trying to seek. You know, it's not like we're trying to seek attention. That's not what it's about. Or look at me, or whatever. It's just I'm pissed off, and I can't tell you why, and I fucking hate everybody.
Yeah.
Right. And I hate myself.
Most importantly, I hate myself.
Right. But you can't tell people that.
No.
Right? That I hate myself and I'm going to hate you more because I'm going to do whatever.
Because then that's not normal behavior.
That's not macho.
Yeah.
You just do it and don't say a thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But those are really, really hard old habits to break. I mean, I know I had to break a lot of those old habits.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult.
Yeah.
Because I was so, deeply trained in my own thoughts, wrong or right.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't an easy thing to just turn around because I was so used to those old habits.
Yeah.
And that's what they were. They're habits.
Yeah.
Bad habits. And to whatever extreme I chose to take it. But nevertheless, they were bad habits. And all from, bad, false belief about myself.
Yeah.
That which was instilled to me from my experiences. That's probably like for yourself, right?
You're just trying to cope. Just trying to get through your day.
Yeah.
Right. Whatever that means, you know, and then you're holding all this other stuff in.
Mm.
Something trivial happens and you lose it.
You know, I know before I came here, I could my life was like a minute at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a day at a time. It was a minute at a time or a second at a time.
Yep.
When I came here. You know, it took me a while to get that, but that was my breaking point. Right.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like with you?
Yeah, I mean, after multiple failed suicide attempts, and especially now having a family, you know, I can't do that to them.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I care about them far more than I care about myself. Even today, even right now, I would say absolutely I do. And I'm here to fight for them to give them, you know, a better shot than I had.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought when I brought my kid into the world too as well. That's another story too. Things don't always turn out the way they want them to, but for the most part, she turned out all right. But nevertheless, we don't want our children to go through the same stuff we went through.
No.
Right?
No. I once heard my father's, I guess she would be my grandmother. She would tell me, you know, oh, well, you need to forgive your father. You know, this happened to him when he was a kid. And you know what? I don't care what happened to him as a kid.
Mm.
You know, this happened to me as a kid. Does that mean I have carte blanche to do what? No.
Mm.
You know, that's completely backwards, asinine thinking.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And it doesn't, you know, and it's generational too, right?
Yeah.
Right. And which we hear about all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard about lots of this as well, right?
Yep.
Knowing you're not alone in that experience. I mean, my experience was obviously different. It wasn't from a family member, but it was always friends of the family.
Yeah.
Right. And still, nevertheless, evil all the way and
yeah.
You look at it, right?
Yeah.
No child should have to go through that.
Absolutely not.
Especially from your parents.
Yeah.
Right.
From parent, friend of the family, anyone
mm-hmm.
that's coming into your house
mm-hmm.
as a kid, that's supposed to be where you're safest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least we thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I still go back to the house where it all happened growing up. And
what's it like going back there?
I look at the trees I used to climb as a kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, I lived in an industrial area. Like there was a gravel road behind my house,
mm.
you know, at the beginning of the summer, you'd be tiptoeing your way through there cause you're wearing no shoes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And you got the rocks under your feet.
Yeah.
By the end of the summer, you're running down the, down yeah. that dirt road.
Yeah,
yeah. Build them up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, going back to the old junkyard behind my house that I used to play in,
mm-hmm.
you know, like there are good memories, but there are a lot of shit ones too.
Mm.
You know, I still haven't gotten up the will to or the courage to talk to the people that live there now. But at the same time, to what end? What am I looking for?
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about yeah. You,
what am I like? Am I looking to them to say you do know all the horrible things that happened here? Now you live here, like. What does that do?
Mm.
So, I mean,
because I know the place where I was first abused, it's all tore down now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When I was a child, when my first abuse, I've talked about this before, but I was born in the Ottawa area,
mm-hmm.
and I lived in Sandy Hill. And Sandy Hill, well, that's all those apartments where my father was and his second wife at the time, and the other children, including my brother, that's where we were. And to me, that was like a pedophile kingdom.
Yeah.
That's what it was, right?
Yeah.
All my experiences, even as a child, like, I mean, I had some good ones, but most of them were bad.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't just from my abusers, but even the big kids were abusers. It was all around. It was like a cancer in that neighborhood. So I was only too happy when I heard that they tore it all down. There's nothing. There's nothing. Everything was leveled, and they built condos. That's right, not condos. No, townhomes, I should say.
Okay.
Or and replaced, and it was facing the river, the Ottawa River.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a beautiful place. I mean, it did have some good things. I mean, as a kid, I remember like being able to, had a swimming pool and this outdoor skating rink and great for tobogganing. But other than that, it was crap.
Oh, I had a junkyard.
Yeah, junkyard would be even better. But so I was curious though, like but I'm gonna ask you about it, but when you went back, what it was like. Is the house still there? Is it not torn down?
House is still there. Not torn down. Yeah. I mean in that area nothing really changes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't go there often. Because when I
it's also 4 hours away.
Yeah. But I still have family there.
Mm-hmm.
When I do go back, I try not to. I try to keep a low profile
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I've run into a few people that I knew when I was a kid, and they're all strung out on meth and
oh, yeah.
like it's rough, right? It was rough when I was a kid there, and it's even rougher now.
That's just too bad. It's too bad.
Yeah.
So, I guess you really don't really go better about that often, obviously, because any of your siblings still back there as well, or did they all everybody move away?
We're everywhere.
You're everywhere.
Yeah, I have siblings out on the West Coast. Most of us are in Ontario, though.
Oh yeah. And you keep in touch with most of them, pretty much?
All of them?
Okay.
All of them.
Okay, right on.
Maybe 5 years ago, one of my younger brothers was having a rough time. So, you know what? Okay, you're let's get you out of that area. So brought him up here. He stayed at my place for a couple of years. You know, we got him to finish his high school diploma.
Wow.
I started steering him towards trades and... Mm. You know, now he's doing well in Toronto.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Mm.
We're all over the place.
And you mentioned you lost your sister to suicide.
Yes.
And I can relate because I lost my younger brother to suicide as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how old she was. My brother, he was 17 going 18.
Yeah. My sister was 14.
14. That's very, very young. Actually, you mentioned it before. I remember that now. When we were debriefing, you mentioned it. It was very, very young. So this age does not matter. I mean, children will do it. They've been doing it from a very young age.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to trigger anybody here out there that are listening now or listening later on, but this is a fact that's really another fact that shouldn't be really ignored.
No.
When it comes to your children, or as far as your children are concerned, especially if something's going on and you're not paying attention to them.
Yeah.
Right?
And they're, you know, asking for help.
Yeah.
And you minimize it.
Yeah.
Right? You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. No, you're going to be all right.
You'll be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do they know? Well, what, you know, exactly. What does anybody know? Right?
They don't.
Mm. Yeah, it's really, really sad. I've heard this from many other people as well over the years, and very similar experiences to us.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going on in their lives, and this is what's ended up happening from very similar experiences. And it still horrifies me today thinking about it, that still goes on. Although I do have great hope for change in the future that hopefully not just in the schools, but even abroad, that they talk about these sort of issues with children more openly
Absolutely.
Than they did in the past, right?
Absolutely.
If you saw the sex ed program that I had when I was in school, what they have to person that they have today, you'd laugh, and it's a joke, right? As far as what we were taught in comparison to what's being taught today, even though they want to just change it from the 80s.
Yeah.
Right?
But it needs to be updated. It needs to be, you know, times are... Like, people are still people, but times are different, right?
We're more open.
It's more open. Everything happens so quickly now. Mm-hmm. There's...
And social media makes it even more open now.
Yeah.
You can't, like, not like you can say, don't look at that. Well, when you're not looking, you're going to look at it anyway. You can just look from your phone and see it.
Yeah.
Right? It's that accessible.
Yeah. That's part of the reason I don't have social media, you know, because it's, you know... Looking at it, like, why do I care if, you know, it's your dog's fifth birthday? I don't know. I need to use social media as a tool rather than
a playtime.
Playtime.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's kind of like I use social media for. That is Twitter, where I'm primarily on. And that's what I do. I use that to advocate what I do here at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't spend a lot of time and do a lot of crap. I just basically focus on what I do here. And I don't talk about my dog because I don't have one. Right? Or my cat or anything else like that.
Well, do you have cats?
No, I don't even have cats.
Oh, my wife and my kids have cats.
Okay. Your wife and your kids have cats. but I do promote what I do here at the house. I advocate quite heavily about it, and I also advocate quite a bit about self-care, personal self-care. If I post anything as food, I get on my smoker.
Yeah.
Right. Which is
which
is really awesome, right? Or a nice beautiful day, or nature, or something like that. But try to keep away from the bullshit. I mean, have a little bit of fun from time to again, but I don't need to tell people what time I'm having dinner at or anything like that.
What's on your mind all the time?
It doesn't matter. Exactly, right?
You wouldn't want to know what's on my mind half the time.
You know, you don't want to see a collar tie that I don't wear. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's the world's strange. It's strange, but it's also a really, really different place now. It's so accessible for children now to go on social media or just use the internet, period, mm-hmm. to find out things and understand things. The internet will probably tell them more than their parents will. As far as sex education, that's concerned, right? As long as they go to the right places.
You go to the wrong places and you'll see things that, you know, I don't shame anyone for what they're into, but stuff that, you know, kids shouldn't be exposed to.
Mm. So what do you think the hardest thing for you was hard struggle when we came here the first time? When we came back the second time, when we finished it off, what do you think was the hardest part of that part of the healing process for you to help you move on?
Getting rid of the shame, mm-hmm. surrounding what happened,
mm-hmm.
You know, dealing with what I'm afraid of, you know.
I didn't hear you mention anger. Were you an angry dude? I was.
I had a lot of angry moments. It with me and anger, it got to the point where, you know, I'm not angry. I'm just tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just tired of feeling this way. Tired of being pissed off all the time.
Mm.
And, you know, it works for me sometimes where, you know, I try to find, you know, the one good thing in a room. You know, everything else is shit,
mm-hmm.
but there's that one good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if there's one good thing, there's got to be another one.
Mm-hmm.
It can't all be shit,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then after a while of trying to find things that are good, you kind of, that anger has kind of subsided a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you can kind of try to tease apart why you're angry.
Mm-hmm.
What has triggered you, or what has given you insight?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because triggers are only that. They're insights into what is really bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's somebody and their behavior that is really bothering, really setting you off, why can't you just talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, just not say anything, be pissed off, wish that they weren't doing it. Whereas if you just said, hey, this really, you know, I what you're doing really has this effect on me. Can we do something else?
Mm.
And then it's done.
Mm. So would you say there's anything today that you really struggle with? More so? Or not really?
Today that I really struggle with? A lot of, like, I struggle with my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle with, you know, self-care. You know, I try to take care of others before I take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I've always done, and I need to learn ways, or at least start practicing ways where I'm actually taking care of myself,
mm-hmm.
and still taking care of others.
Mm-hmm.
But myself at the same time.
You know, it's what you're saying, and I've always had this, but I was kind of brought up that I grew up on a farm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we always helped everyone another. So my grandparents always taught me to help one another,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's not a question of, you know, trying to people please, although we use that terminology,
yeah.
or that conversation around here. And it's not even so much about that, it's just about helping your neighbor. And there's nothing wrong with helping your neighbor as long as you know when to say stop, right?
Yeah.
Right? Or, you know, if somebody's outright needs help, well, I'm just going to go and help them. I don't care. That's just the way I am.
Yeah. Me as well.
Right? And it's not a question of, you know, like people pleasing, as I just mentioned, or that sort of language. It's just, that's just the way it was brought up. It's just the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not like you're not taking care of yourself. Well, you kind of are because you're helping this person.
Yeah.
Right? And I still firmly believe in that. I mean, yes, I know I was a horrible, horrible people pleaser, meaning I would overextend myself, and I'm amazed what I accomplished most times. And sometimes, well, I would fail.
Yeah.
But not most of the time. excuse me. I would go through with it, but I was sometimes I was dragging my ass.
Yeah.
Because I was just so damn tired.
Yeah.
But I would still go ahead and do it anyway. Right?
Even though it's detrimental to yourself.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Right?
Yep.
And overextending myself.
Yep.
But, so, learn to draw those lines or having a really good boundary. Well, I tell you, I've learned that really, really well. I have no trouble saying no now.
Oh.
What's
your secret?
Just no. Just say it, you know?
Yeah.
My secret is, in order for me to figure that out, I mean, I still have those values that I were still that I was brought up with, but I just, you know, some people just go too far, right?
Yeah.
It's never enough.
Well,
so, but I am wise enough and old enough now so that I know what could potentially get pulled into, and I just say no.
Mm-hmm.
That's simple. I don't have to explain why. I just no. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to talk to me again, well, that's I'm not going to go home and spill my milk over it, that's for sure, or cry over it, that's for sure. But that's just practicing really, really good self-boundaries for myself. And that's one thing I had to really, really learn. And it was a hard thing to learn,
mm-hmm.
especially since I was a people pleaser. You know, and the worst part was I had those other good, so-called good values or qualities that were instilled in me since I was a young man. So to be able to differentiate the two of them and still be honorable about it was a hard thing to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, when I started using that word no, I tell you, I could write a book about no. Really.
I would read your book about no.
You know, and not about Dr. No, but just no, period, right?
Yeah.
And it's a really, really good quality to carry, to have, and knowing your own personal boundaries of what you're willing to give to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's something that I had to learn. But how I learned that was from once I figured out all these so-called feelings that men are not supposed to have. Once I figured all that out.
Oh, I feel them all.
Oh, well, apparently
sometimes multiple at the same time.
But apparently, I was supposed to, as a young man growing up, I wasn't supposed to have feelings, you know, other than the anger that I showed from time to time. But once when I came here and I figured out, I sorted out all those feelings, what they really meant, and
mm-hmm.
what they meant to me, not to, you know, not what they mean in a book or what they mean to somebody else, but what they mean to me in a proper way, then it made it easier once I figured that out, that I could just say no.
Yeah.
That really doesn't completely answer your question of how did I do it. Well, I just got fed up with it. Really.
Yeah.
I did. I just got tired. And I burned the candle still at both ends for the most part. That's just my life. I just like that, right? But
but
I still know when to say no. Like I know I can do a lot, but I won't do a lot more. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
No, that does.
I like to keep busy, and I like to like that's why I come to the house, and I run a bowling league, and I play baseball in the summer, and I do lots of things, right? But I like to keep busy. But if you're gonna infringe on my time and take that stuff away, I'm gonna tell you no.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what I like to do. This is what I want to do. And coming to the house, well, that was the better me, and that's obviously worked out because I'm here. I am saying no to you,
right?
As before, I was yes. How many times? Where?
Yeah.
When? You know, I don't do that at all anymore. Like even to my boss, I just tell him, take a hike, man. This is what it is. You take it or leave it. I have plans. You're not gonna treat me like a dog or anything like that. I won't take that at all. He knows. I already tried it once before. I just walk.
Yeah.
Right.
See, that's something I have struggles with is saying no.
Mm.
You know, I think for me it comes from you know, selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't want to see myself as selfish, even though it's not selfish. I'm
mm-hmm.
taking care of myself.
Yeah.
But that's just
But that's a hard thing to really learn. That it's not selfish.
No, it's not at all.
And really, in retrospect, if you turn it around, it's really selfish on their part.
Yeah.
Especially if you know that they're able and capable of doing it.
Yep.
And they put it on you, and them knowing outright that you are pretty full with things going on. And
that's okay. Nathan will do it.
Yeah, exactly. Nathan will do it. Exactly. And that was the sort of thing I was getting, right?
Yeah.
And once I learned how to do that, well, a lot of these people don't mess with me at all now. I just don't like it. Too bad.
Yeah.
Right? And most of them don't bother.
Yeah.
So that's what also goes to show you also showed me that I was being used.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Only for my good nature. Well, my good nature is good, and it still is good, but don't mess with my good nature anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Now that I understand that I have, you know, self-value as you have self-value. I mean, you know, and that was a hard thing to learn, right? Really, believing from a child, from a very young age, that I was a schmuck all my life.
Yep.
And for many, many, many years, more years than I care to mention now, but believing that, and even to this day, I still have, sometimes I struggle with thinking I'm a schmuck, but I have really good grounding and mindfulness techniques that I bring myself back pretty quick, and I'm not down there very long. Trust me, I'm not down there long, and then I'll just say no or F off or whatever it takes to bring me to where I'm supposed to be, because I do not want to go back there where I was.
No, because you get stuck in that. And then, you know, for myself as well, like I try to practice grounding techniques. One of my favorite ones in the summer is if, you know, I'm feeling, you know, I'm really feeling it. I'm feeling disconnected. I'll go for a walk with no shoes.
No shoes.
Right?
Well, that would
walk in the grass.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
But being a man and learning these things, and then, well, thank God the world is changing, and I have to say that.
Yeah.
Because there's still a lot of that old stigmatism out there. I know, you know, with the group I'm doing there now, I hear the same thing over and over again. It's still there. You know, men were taught that way, and they think that way, and it's only for, you know, our pre-generations that brought it on to us. But,
yeah. Yeah. You know, I try in my classes, like I said, I try to get guys to be their true, authentic selves, no matter what that is, no matter what, because I would rather talk to you as your authentic self than some shell of a person with a mask on that
pretend to be something like that.
Yeah.
Right. So now, so how do you find doing groups now? And then that since you were a participant, how does it feel to have the hat on the other way?
I get as much out of it as the as I did when I was in the groups.
As a participant. Yeah.
You know, it's humbling. It's you feel this sense of all this gratitude when you see people come in on their first night, and then 16 weeks later, you know, there's change. They're not feeling the same ways, or they're maybe feeling the same ways, but they've now know some techniques to kind of get themselves out of that
shithole.
That shithole.
Yep. Yeah. It's funny. I love what you're saying, and even with the group that I'm with there now, although we just finished week 7, I've already seen a change in them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And people who didn't talk.
Mm-hmm.
Or more, they didn't talk before. They don't get upset as easily as they were. They feel validated
because you've built this bond with these people. You know, the bond that you build in group, it's like nothing I've ever experienced anywhere else. You know, I had group last night and I had to come in a little bit late. I felt so bad.
She still
so
came.
Bad.
She still came, though.
I still came.
Yeah.
You know, but I want to be there for these guys and, you know, help them through their journey.
You know, it's funny. My really first real peer experience was back when I got divorced. And this is 30 years ago now, plus now, right? But when I went, my mother, it's funny, my mother set this up for me. It was run by a therapist, but it was still a peer support group. And it's funny because I was the only man amongst 7 other very angry women.
Yeah.
And that was my very first peer experience, peer support experience. I was quite astonished how well it worked for that.
Yeah.
Because I was torn apart when my marriage dissolved. I was just torn apart really, really bad. And, you know, it was one of my things that I believe that I thought I should have had from my previous childhood experience, thinking that I should have had, well, I'm here, I'm expecting a perfect family. And
what is
a
perfect family?
Well, I didn't know us. I was trying to figure out. That's what I thought I was getting, but it didn't work out that way, right? Because I didn't have it as a child. So I figured, well, I'll get married and I'll make it perfect. Well, it didn't work out quite that way.
Yeah.
Right? It ended up being a real bad experience as much as I wanted it. And, but reflecting on what I'm saying about the peer support, that was really, really awesome. I mean, and the fact that I sat there with all these women for what was it, 8 weeks? And then even after that, we stayed in touch with one another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the same time, I never dated with anybody or anything like that. We all just hung out. I was the only man, and they were glad I was there because they needed to hear another side experience.
Did you find it more comfortable?
Well, after the first week or two, yes.
Before I started facilitating groups, I've never felt comfortable around men.
Mm.
Never. Like if I'm in a room, you know, and you know, I get a little bit squirrely.
Yeah.
But I think it took me a long time of, you know, going to sit in groups with men, you know, facilitate groups where I kind of let those guards down.
Mm.
You know, I'm sure that my dislike and distrust of men comes from my abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I've been working on.
Mm. Well, I know for me, I was just so fed up and I was abusing both sides.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't trust men or women.
Yeah.
I still don't. I'm going to say they agree, but I was so fed up. I just didn't care. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there and I was kind of astonished that I'm sitting here with a group of men and they're all talking about stuff we're not supposed to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And quite openly about it.
Yeah.
I was quite astonished by that and quite taken by that and quite, well, how would I say it? Well, honored that I was allowed to sit there amongst these guys.
That there's that much comfort and that much trust in that space.
Yeah. And we only met each other.
Yeah.
And we're men.
Yep.
Right? So we still managed to form a pretty good bond, like you've seen in the group, right? But even as a participant, I kept in touch with a couple of them for a few years, and now we've lost touch.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost pretty much touch with everybody that I was in the group with, including the facilitators that were there.
Mm-hmm.
That did it, and both those facilitators are not here anymore. And you know, to this day, I'm quite happy to thank them. I mean, but they've gone on with their own lives, and which I totally get that.
Yeah.
You know, I always say that majority of the people that come in here, I mean, there's only a few of us that will stay behind and do what was given to us, give back what was given to us.
Yeah.
But as a whole, I know when I came in here, I just wanted to heal and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Right? Initially, that's what I wanted to do.
But when you show up, oh my God, I've got 2 hours. Like, I don't want to do this today.
Yeah.
Like, I've got so many other things going on.
It's not even so much that. It's just I wanted to get in here, heal, and get on with them. I wanted a life, which I wasn't getting.
Yeah.
So I figured, well, if I come in here, do my 15 weeks, I'm going to get my life back. Well, I did. I had to go a little longer than that. But what I mean by my life back, figure out who I am,
mm-hmm.
who's the real me. Because everybody knew.
Yeah.
I didn't know what my identity was. Was that like for you too?
For me as well.
Same with you, right?
You know, I went through a long, I don't know what I like. I don't know what, you know, I don't know who I am. I don't know, like, but it took me a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
I've got it figured out.
Mm.
At least I think I do.
Yeah. But, you know, and it was a growing thing. And, I mean, I guess in some ways, maybe some people, I can't figure the people out for myself, but it was hard to be patient for that long.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, however long it was.
Yep. You want it to be just like that. Okay, I touch you on the forehead, and you're healed. You'll never think about this stuff again.
That's, yeah. That was a
That's BS.
That's BS. Pure bullshit.
Yep. It is.
The reality of it is that the beauty of it is when you come in here and you're able to talk like that, whether you're, I've heard of talk with women around as well now. I like both sides there because I like insights from both sides,
mm-hmm.
really, because that's really important. Because, you know, it's just important. It's like seeing both sides of the moon.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one side is dark, one side is light. Well, when the sun, when it rotates around, you're seeing the light on that side again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it was with me. I wanted to see both sides and understand, well, what the hell, who am I? But I need to talk to women as well. That was very, very important. That's why I like the co-ed program.
Yes.
The phase two program is just that purpose because I needed to hear from women and their experiences, what happened to them. Now, I was abused by a woman, and actually, she's the same woman who took my virginity as well, even when I turned by I was 15, she took my virginity.
Mm-hmm.
She abused me when I was 6, 7, and then took my virginity. So, she...
What kind of a person does that?
I don't know. I don't know. But a bad person. Anyway.
Yeah.
But this person really, really messed me up as far as understanding, you know, not only about my sexuality too, because I don't trust either side. So
yeah.
That really screwed me up as far as my sexuality is concerned for a long time. And then I finally figured out, well, what I want. But even then, I didn't know what I wanted anyway because I didn't even know who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very confusing for me. So now I really, really value listening to other women and their experiences as well. It really, really helps me. It helped me understand myself, and it helped me find a path that I could go on to figure myself out, if that
mm-hmm.
makes any sense.
Yeah, the path of self-discovery.
The path of self-discovery, right? And realizing that I wasn't the schmuck that I thought I was.
Yeah.
Which is not, which was, boy, that was a, some job. I tell you, some job. It's hard to put words to it other than, oh, I'm happy for today and what has come out of it. But sure, a hell of a lot of work. Oh, my gosh.
And it will continue to be.
Yeah. No, it's keep yourself in check.
Yeah. I mean, if something comes too easily, is it really worth anything?
Yeah. And was it meant to be?
Was it meant to be?
Yeah. I would question it, too.
Yeah.
Right.
This is what we're doing here is, you know, truly an authentic experience, right? Like, you know, helping people discover, you know, themselves, discover, you know, that whatever it is about themselves, they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're just yourself.
Mm. But that's to figure that out. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know I was myself, but I was a messed up myself.
Yep.
And I didn't understand all those pieces that are there. I'll go back to that so-called thing called feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, yeah.
See, and another thing which really shocked me too when I did my group the first time too was seeing other men cry. And I'm going, what?
Yeah.
What? I don't even do that myself.
I cry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't at the time, right? And I was taught not to.
Mm-hmm.
So I was smacked. If I was crying, I got a big smack.
Yeah.
Kicking in.
That's helpful.
Yeah, that was helpful. That's how me. I'd run away and cry even more probably.
Yeah.
But that was how I was brought up. But unfortunately, it carried in adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's not good not to cry even as a male. Apparently does something. I think it overfills the bucket a few times or something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It creates stress and all those kind of things. Makes your duck banks go all weird and the ducks fly right by you.
I've had nights where I've left facilitating the group and I go home and once I'm lying in my bed I start crying.
Mm.
Not crying because I feel bad about myself, crying because of what I've heard in group, crying because of, you know, feeling all that pain
mm-hmm.
that some of that other people are feeling in here,
mm-hmm.
you know, wanting to take some of that burden for them. But that's why I'm here.
You know, funny you say that, you know, as much pain as I've seen in this house, I've sure hell seen a lot of joy too.
Oh, yeah.
It outweighs it.
Yeah.
It outweighs it, right? And the joy, what I'm talking about is the joy of the participants coming in here and finally figuring themselves out.
Yep.
Or figuring things out. Oh my God, I'm not that person I thought I was.
Yeah. Oh my God, like. All of you here are doing that too?
Yeah.
Like, what?
What's up
it's
with
not
that?
Just me.
Not just me, right? Yeah, it's been a tremendous experience, and I would highly recommend it to any man that's going through this, provided you're willing to deal with your shit, because if you're not,
your ego has no
place here whatsoever, you know, ego or attitude or anything like that, you've got to come in willing to, well, if you're not going to cry, at least let your hair down. And partake and do the work, I guess is what I'm trying to say. If you don't do the work, you just look at the book. I had plenty of other things last night. I had one participant tell me last night, and I think I said this too, that, well, they're not doing anything for me, but obviously is because his whole, oh, geez. Sorry about that. Damn, boom. It must be doing something because you're different.
Yeah.
Right. If you're week 7 and you're talking differently, you're different. You're not getting high anymore. you know, which had a really, really, really bad problem. You're talking about stuff. You're journaling. So you're not getting anything out of this. I don't get it.
Yeah.
You are.
Of course. You keep coming back.
You keep coming back, right?
You're getting something,
yeah. Right? So, I mean, you could have stayed home and just got high, but no, you're actually coming back. And I was saying this to my co-facilitator the other day, or actually Peter, which I've had on here too as well. Peter mm-hmm. Dawson, Professor Peter Dawson. And we noticed, we were saying last night, man, they're all changing, but this guy's really changing.
Yeah.
And he's got a bad drug problem too to begin with, but he's been got off of it. But he's been struggling for years and mm-hmm. years and years. It's been so perpetual. And the guy's, he's not a young guy anymore either. Like, he's probably pushing 50 right now.
Yeah.
Right. So he's got some miles, is all I'm trying to say. So it's a little harder for the older guys. It's only because it's been a bad habit longer.
Yeah. So to unlearn those coping.
Exactly. Like I always say for myself, it took a little bit longer only because I've done it longer.
Yeah.
The bad habits. So it's going to take a little bit longer to get off the bad habits.
Yep.
No one can ever tell me you can't get off of it, because you can.
You can.
Right? If you want to, you can. It just may take you a little longer. Right? And believing in yourself, which is another thing that could take you a little bit longer to do.
And not being afraid of setbacks, because they're going to happen.
Yeah.
They will.
Yeah.
Expect it.
Yeah.
And expect, handle it and keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, I expect to do to do 20 steps forward and then maybe falling back 30 steps.
Yeah.
A few times.
Yeah.
Or even more than a few times.
Oh, I've learned to do everything that I know how to do by completely destroying. and making mistakes.
Exactly. Yeah. The same thing here. I've been, and even if I had to make the same mistake, a few times.
Yeah, I'm pretty thick that way too.
Yeah. Well, I'm thick that way. I'm very thick that way. But that's sometimes what it took. I had to make the mistake a few times to where it actually sank in.
Yeah.
Said, okay, all right, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I'll stop now, right?
Uncle.
Yeah. And that's basically what I would do. But it was so worth it, I love seeing the older generation coming in here
mm-hmm.
to more extent than they are now. And actually taking care of themselves and believing in themselves now after all these years.
I have a gentleman in my group who's in his 80s.
Yes.
Right?
Mm.
And, good on him for finding the courage,
mm-hmm.
to at least find this,
mm-hmm.
to be willing to talk about stuff he hasn't talked about ever.
Yeah.
To anyone.
Anyone, exactly. And I've noticed that too. Even with women too, the same thing. Women coming in here much later on in life, and not really, not really having any place, or never even talked about it. Period.
Mm-hmm.
I remember doing I did a phase 2 art therapy program a while back, and there was a lady in there. She was in her 70s, and she never talked about this before to anybody after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not uncommon. We were talking about social media earlier. I see this all the time. Well, not only just because they don't have any place to go or anybody to talk to, or the resources are not there, just the fact that they've never had the opportunity, or they've never, they just never had the opportunity, or
no one ever cared.
No one ever cared, right? And if they did try, they're usually shut down.
Yep.
Right? And that's not even all that long ago.
Yeah.
Right?
I've had... older people come up and talk to me, not knowing about my past.
Mm-hmm.
Something will come up in the news, and an older person I was talking to was like, "Oh, well, I like sex. Why these kids can just get over it?"
Mm.
Like,
it's not that.
It doesn't like.
No, it's not. It's just not that simple.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, and it's not the same.
So I'm curious. So when you did the phase 2 program, is that when things started to really change for you, or it was kind of already changed already? And then
it was already changing.
Already changing.
What
do you think you got out of phase 2? What do you think it helped you with there?
Getting shedding more of the shame, shedding more of the guilt, sharing my story, listening to other stories.
Mm.
Being around people that Right. I say it in groups, like, these are everyone here. These are my people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't belong anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I belong here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. just like everyone else. Everyone belongs here.
Mm-hmm. So it was like that.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, originally the phase two program was only an 8-week program.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in the phase two book, if you see my face in there, that was the original phase two program that went 16 weeks when we switched it over. And we were all guinea pigs. There was actually, Art did the facilitation for it.
Okay.
And there was 20 of us, over 20 of us. And we did it at Humber.
Okay.
And that's when it changed over to 16 weeks. So the program that's there now is basically a takeoff from that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a phase two program, the 8-week program, it was helpful. But when I did the 16-week program, it was even more helpful.
Yeah.
I was able to be more in depth in my story. 8 weeks is not enough to do what we do. It's
mm-hmm.
just not enough. You need that time. And some people need a little bit more time.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. I do a lot of growing, even not here, right? Mm-hmm. Taking what I've learned here or stuff I've heard here and kind of stewing on it for a while and kind of implementing it here and there and where
mm-hmm.
I can.
Mm-hmm. So, can I ask what kind of grounding techniques you did for yourself to help keep you grounded? Because obviously you got off the drugs and the alcohol and
yeah.
changed your life around completely, right?
Yeah, completely. I mean, grounding, breathing,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to slow everything down around me, not having social media,
mm-hmm.
not trying not to live where everything is so fast paced right now.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just try to slow it all down. You know, that's what I do to cope. I also talk,
mm-hmm.
right? Talking to, you know, my partner, talking to people in the group, talking to other facilitators, talking to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps to kind of keep me grounded.
Yeah, it's curious. I was just curious because people do certain things to ground themselves. Everything from going for walking in the grass, like you're
mm-hmm.
talking about as your child going
yep.
walking, you know, to you know, if you're doing meditation,
mm-hmm.
You know, walks, music, anything.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I find getting tattooed helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody here can see, but I'm almost have a full body suit.
Almost full body suit. Eh?
Yeah. But for me and tattoos, I see it almost as a way of claiming my body back,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so it's my body and I'll do what I want with it.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
You're not the first person I've heard say that.
Yeah.
Right. And from both sides, both sexes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they've had tattoos and it's just from their personal experiences that it brought them to that. And that was one thing they thought by doing so. That claims, that means that my body is mine. You can't, you know.
Yeah.
You can't mark it.
Yeah. Tattoos hurt, right? And I earned every tattoo I have.
Yeah.
So, right?
And
to your
arms look beautiful, right?
Yeah. To me, it's cathartic.
Yeah. Mm. And you're very colorful.
Thank you.
in a good way. Like,
yeah.
Folks, you can't see it, but if you saw... Nathan's arms are—they're very well done. A lot of very good, very very good artwork. And now, if you had a mixture of different artists doing it, or you try to stay with the same people,
no,
or person,
have you know different like types of tattoos, types of artwork that I like. Like I like old Japanese tattoos, old American tattoos.
Mm.
You know, I've even started combining the two. On my chest, I have a dragon panther, if that makes sense.
Dragon panther. So, well, what was your first one you had done?
On my hand.
On your hand?
Yeah. Nothing says I'm a badass 14-year-old than, you know, getting your hand tattooed.
Yeah, it's right in the palm, too, right?
Oh, that I did recently.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's got the eye in it.
It's planchette.
Yeah.
Like a Ouija board.
Yeah. Or a third eye.
Third eye, yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's a great way to express yourself, too, and it's awesome. See, I think tattoos are beautiful, so you just have more than most.
Yeah.
Respectively.
Yeah.
So, but it's also a good way to, and another way of expressing yourself, that one of the things that happens to us as survivors, or rather as children when we're children, is when we are sexually abused, is we're part of losing our identity. And I talk about when I came here, trying to find who I was and who I really am. And I'm like, well, my name is Stuart, but who am I?
Yeah.
Right? I go to work. I have a kid. I have grandkids now. But really, who am I?
Yeah.
Right?
And why am I so pissed off?
Why am I so angry? Yeah, I was a very angry kid. A very, very angry kid. And that's why I went to jail as many times as I did, because I was very, very angry.
Because nobody could tell you.
Yeah.
Right?
No. No, but my sensei could.
Yeah.
And he kept me out of jail.
Yeah.
To this day, I thank him for keeping me out of jail. He showed me ways to get rid of my anger.
Yeah.
And I didn't get in trouble for it, right?
Yeah.
I got beat up, right? It was so worth it. Right? And I would recommend this to anybody with a parent, where their child, or even as a young adult, and you have all this energy, if you don't want to go to the gym, go do this.
Yeah.
Go do Shotokan.
Yeah.
And you want to get wore out, you 2 hours out, even an hour of that, and you'll be going, you'll be crawling on your knees.
You're done.
And you won't want to be bothering anybody. You just want to go home and relax, right? But
too tired to be angry.
But the point being is that it helped me with control, because there is a certain amount of honor. Talking about Japanese, right? You don't go there. You don't pick fights. You walk away from it, right? That's why I learned to walk away from fights, right? As before, I would never do that. I wouldn't care who they were or what they were. Or they could be up or not. It didn't make a difference to me, none.
Yeah.
And sometimes they win, sometimes they lose. It didn't matter. It was the point that I stood up for myself, right?
Yeah. I would say I lost just as many as I won.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But I think that stems from my anger and my abuse as a child. So that's why I would orchestrate that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I would recommend to any parent that could be going through this experience. But they might have had this for their child as well, or they've had this, or even as an adult, and you want to burn some energy off and learn some control, because you've got because you're angry all the time and you have a bad temper. You learn to control your temper there. And once you learn these other things, obviously you're going to fight better, but at the same time, you need to control your temper, because if you have a bad temper, you're going to lose, right? And you don't pick fights, and you don't want to go to jail for something like that.
No.
Right? And which I used to do. Some more weekends in jail for stupidest things I could think of. And to this day, I can't believe I even think about it or remember it, but I guess it's a good reminder why I don't do it. And plus, I'm getting way old.
Yeah.
And I don't heal as quick.
Yeah. Right? I found once I got to 40, it's just...
Yeah, I just don't heal as quick as I used to, right? And I've got enough scars.
Yeah.
I don't need any more. Yeah. Never mind my inside scars, but my outside scars too, right? But yeah, it's really, really highly recommend that for anybody who, if you're having anger issues and, you haven't dealt with your shit yet, or maybe you are, this is one good way of helping you control your anger so you don't get yourself in trouble and learn to walk away, even not just physically, but verbally, right? Know when to stop.
Yeah.
And
a little bit of anger isn't a bad thing.
No, it's not. You're
a little, like, if used constructively, if used, to get you somewhere.
But the only thing with problem with anger is good as healthy as we teach people here or talk to the people about it here. Anger is good as healthy, you deserve it. But if you let anger turn into rage, that's usually when shit happens.
Yeah.
Right? And you usually lose.
Yeah.
Right? Something happens bad. Right? So.
And then you get into regret.
You get into regret for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be. But just finding a better way or a better path is so much, more responsible.
Yeah.
I guess if I can put it in that terminology, I guess it is. But healthier in the long run for yourself. So. We mentioned about the phase 2 training, so I guess you're looking forward to that.
I am. I finish phase 1 group the last weekend of January.
Mm-hmm.
The weekend after that, I have phase 2 training, and then I'm facilitating phase 2 in March.
Who are you doing with?
I have no idea.
No idea yet?
No.
Oh, yeah, right on.
Going. I I don't know if I want to know. I'm just going to
just
go
wait,
in.
Right? I know. No, we have some pretty good facilitators here, too. So, you know, I'm sure it'll be good experience. And again, going through the program as a participant, going in even as a facilitator, you learn a lot of stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You get right into the material and what everything actually means. Like, what is the idea behind it instead of just reading off a page and thinking about it for a second and then
It as kind of like, well, why am I stuck? Right? A lot of times you go, I can't speak for the people, but I've just heard this lots of times, but I know a lot of times, sometimes participants go in there and they're really, really stuck. I was stuck. So I needed to figure that out. If it meant writing my story out and then sharing my story, or if it meant doing different things or to change my thought process, well, I would do that. Such as using mindfulness techniques as an example, better grounding techniques, even empathy
for yourself,
to begin with, and then others after, right?
Yeah.
But being able to learn that stuff to help get you by through the day or the week or the month or the year
or that minute
or that, that second,
yeah,
right. And sometimes that's what it comes down to, is right to that 1 second before you, flip a lid, if I can put it in, put it that way, right? But it was so, so helpful for me. But being stuck, you know, and then not being able to recognize it, sometimes it's very helpful to be in a group, because the group can help you realize that you are stuck, right? Not like we're going to go out and say, you're a friggin' stuck, man. What's wrong with you? We can't do that. That's not what we're here to do.
No, chances are you'll hear, I was stuck like that too. This is kind of what I did. This worked for me.
Yeah, exactly. All right. It's a lot of still the I statements, right?
Yeah.
Still the I statements,
yeah.
Any way you look at it. But I know for me, where I was stuck, you know, it by going to phase two, that helped me getting out of being stuck. And then facilitating too, because I was still stuck on some things when I was facilitating. But by doing so, and I did a lot of groups, right? And that really, really helped me.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm not a participant anymore, but I get to hear others and I get to share little bits and pieces, right? I don't, you know, although it's not about me, I've had my turn, but sometimes, actually, I was amazed. I've had groups where the participants, okay, well, what do you got to say about this?
Yeah.
What's your experience?
Yep.
Right? Although that's really not our role. Our role is just to hold the same place.
Yep.
And the floor is yours, because we only have 2 hours.
But that's showing the empathy of that individual.
Yeah.
He's... or she is thinking about themselves and others.
Exactly. And maybe by them asking you, too, at the same time, well, what did you do to get you to where you are right now?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what have you done? Well, maybe I'll try that.
Yeah.
Or maybe I won't.
Yeah.
But at least they hear something else that somebody else has done to try to change that path that they think they may be in, or...
what I have done may not work for others.
Yeah.
Probably won't.
Yeah.
You know, it worked for me... mostly because I'm stubborn.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah.
So have you tried any of the other programs that are just that? Just the phase one and the phase two? Is
phase one and phase two. I've done the assist training.
Okay, yeah.
The suicide intervention.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to a few conferences with Gatehouse. And I'm hoping... you know, this year I can kind of help and get the word out more about Gatehouse, to kind of become more involved, to help the Gatehouse get the recognition and the, you know, so people know what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just this derelict house that's sitting kind of off on its own.
Yeah.
It's a place where, you know, amazing things are happening.
Totally amazing things are happening.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I was amazed. I talked about doing a ton of cross spray, but I'm amazed how many people in here, and I've talked to many people down here in the Lakeshore, they live here. They've lived here all their lives. They didn't even know this house was.
Yeah.
They walk by every day.
Yeah.
Twice a day, sometimes 3 times a day. They see the Gatehouse, but they still don't understand what it means.
Yeah.
Right. And we've been here since 1998. So we're 21, going to 22 years now. 22, this is our 22nd year now.
Yep.
Wow, time is flying. It flies by. But it's amazing how many people don't know about it. And I also say that the community is more open to this now, more than they ever think. Well, I think you could blame social media for that, for a good part of that. And people, the Me Too movement, that's really, really changing things. It's just not one-sided anymore. It's both sides, as it should be. I mean, you know, we need to take care of it as a whole, not just as not to individualize it as one side or the other side.
Yeah.
We need to make it as one big problem all around, so that both sides get fixed, not just one side.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's, you know,
because Gatehouse would be just as backwards if we only catered to men.
Yeah. Or women.
Just as, you know, younger looking for help, going to groups and being like, this is for women.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
This doesn't happen to men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
But
Gatehouse is for all.
Yeah. So in the last 22 years, we're probably around 30,000 people come to the house.
Something like that.
Yeah. And that's an incredible number. And that, you know, there's probably more.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of other things that the houses have been involved, you look at the university campuses and the college campuses that where we've been, the police college as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're everywhere, but people still don't know who we are.
Yeah.
Right.
We can change that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. And I think the world is ready for it now.
Yeah.
Right. To a greater level than they were even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Only because I think people are educated, and I think the bottom line is people are just fed up. Now if we only just get people in homes to think differently, meaning being able to have open dialogue and conversation.
Yeah.
About it. That's why I still think they should need to teach it in the schools. It's more readily than what they do.
Yeah. Instead of, you know, pushing it off into a dark corner and we don't talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, hopefully that's going to change. So what would you like to see for yourself in the future as far as your recovery? Obviously, you want to feel better and not have to think about it again, but that's not going to happen. But what would you consider a happy place for you? I mean, I'm sure you used to look pretty happy to me now. I don't know when you came in here originally, but your life seems to be a little bit more, well, if I can put it, a little bit more level for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. It's much more level. You know, what I see myself in the future is always being involved with the Gatehouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys can't get rid of me now. I've got my foot in the door.
We need you around here, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that. The Gatehouse needs us for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the future holds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just involved with the Gatehouse. That's all I can say for now. I'll come back. I'll come back with on a later episode.
Well, the mic's always open for you. Yeah. That's for sure.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate you coming in here tonight and
talking
about that.
Thank you for having me.
Because other than that, folks, listeners out there, you have to listen to me just by myself tonight. And sometimes that can be, well, trying. I'm only kidding. I don't know what I mean. But anyway, I really appreciate you coming in here, Nathan. Nathan, you bring hope to other men, and not just men, but women as well. You know, again, reminding people that we're not alone.
Absolutely.
Well, which is really, really, you know, that can't be reinforced enough as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of people still think they're alone, but they're not. They don't realize, right, that there's... You know, the world's a different place now than what it was 5 years ago. And we're talking, you know, as an example, 5 years ago or 6 years ago or 7 years ago, hell, even 9 years ago when I first came here,
mm-hmm.
The world is not the same place anymore in regards to talking about sexual abuse.
Much more open.
And I can add on other things such as, you know, domestic violence towards women,
mm-hmm.
As another thing being really in the forefront now. I mean, there's lots of examples like Harvey Weinstein, as a good example of, you know, there's somebody rich and powerful that you're just going to be squashed.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby.
Yep.
Squashed.
Good.
Okay? Another guy with a guy with no remorse.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't even think he should even be in jail. He thinks he still did nothing wrong.
Well,
you know, and you know, when he's almost 80 now, right? So he'd be lucky if he'll have to do 10 years. He won't get out because he won't get early parole because he shows no remorse.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll do his full 10 years. If he showed remorse towards his victims, then he probably would only do maybe, you know,
5/8, 3/4 of a sentence. Something like that, right?
Yep.
And now he's going to do a full 10 years.
Good.
Because he has no remorse. He did nothing wrong.
Then let him sit there.
Exactly. So I'm still trying to figure that out why I didn't think that was even legal to drug a woman and, or a man. Mainly in this case, it's women. So I didn't think it was legal to do that sort of thing. I didn't think it was all right. I think that's kind of sad. Pretty pathetic. Why would you have to do that? Right? You know, why don't you just go get a hooker then? If that's all it is.
Yeah.
Right? And you're rich and you're powerful. You just go to Nevada. Like, they got all kinds of brothels.
Yeah.
Right? And you can go pay for it.
Yes.
And you could probably get private where you won't even get in the news media. No one will know about it. So you have all that money. I don't understand why you couldn't do that, right?
Because then that takes away his power.
That's right. By drugging the person and think, oh, yeah, I got you.
I'm in control.
I'm in control, right? Yeah. Well, now he's somebody else's buddy.
That's not funny either, though.
No, it's not
right?
funny
like,
either, but that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you get into the big house.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not a joke. It's a fact.
It's a fact, yes.
It's not a joke, right? I'm not saying it just to be an asshole,
mm-hmm.
pardon the pun, but nonetheless, you know, they're human beings,
mm-hmm.
nonetheless, right? And even though you are done bad and you're in the can, you know, that should even happen to them as well, as far as I'm concerned, because that messes them up more. And how do you expect to reform somebody from doing a crime if they're being sexually assaulted in jail because they have no power over these goofs that are doing it to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's another conversation in the works, right?
And then you come out and
reoffend, right? And put you right back in again, right? So I don't see the justice. I think that's just part of the system, how it works. You know, this is how we keep all these people employed. You know, you go in, you get more messed up, you come out, you get messed up again, you go back in again, you keep them in the job, right? Right? It's a
vicious cycle going.
It's a vicious, vicious circle. It happens here in Canada, too,
yeah.
not just
oh,
in
yeah.
the U.S., right? The U.S. is probably, they have much harsher sentences than they do here for some of their capital crimes than we have here.
Yeah.
Although, you know, you can do murder one here and still not even do 25 years.
My abuser got 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
That's not even.
And he killed one of his kids.
Yeah.
Right? Drove one of his.
Yeah.
Right? Like.
No justice there.
No. No. You know, my only hope is that he's out there somewhere miserable.
Mm. Mm. Could be dead for all you know, too, right? Or,
yeah.
Or you think you would know.
I don't know if I would or not.
Mm.
I don't know. You know, I sometimes think about what I would do or how I would react.
Mm.
You know, I would like to think I would go to his funeral and let everyone there know exactly what kind of a man
he was.
They're mourning.
Mm. Mm.
Mm. You know, because, you know, my father, like, as far as I know, he lives in Ottawa, I think. But he's started his life all over again, right? He's got 9 kids out there, you know. Maybe he has a new family. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mm. Mm. Probably a good thing we don't know, right?
No, it's a good thing.
Yeah, because if you want to get on with your life.
Yeah. No, I've spent far too much time, you know, I can't even go to Ottawa at this point. Like, there's so much that I'm still dealing with regards to him, that every time I go to Ottawa, I don't know if it's necessarily conscious or unconscious, but I end up looking for him every time.
Mm. Ottawa's a big place now.
I know.
It's huge.
What do I do if I find him?
Yeah. yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I stay away.
Yeah, understandably so.
Yeah.
Nathan, I can't thank you enough for coming in, sharing your great insights in your healing recovery. And of course your story of what brought you here, which is horrible as well, like everybody else's story that comes in here. But the beautiful part about it is your healing journey,
mm-hmm.
and how you've transformed. You know, like I was a shithole when I came in here, and it's wonderful to see you too. Now, the first time I met you was actually at our conference this year.
Yeah.
We stepped outside. We were outside having a smoke, and that's where I met you.
Yeah.
It's the first time I met you, and I never thought we'd be doing this now, but this is awesome.
And who knew then?
Yeah, who knew then?
No, usually first time people meet me, I'm 6'4", like 300 pounds, covered in tattoos. People tend to, they
should I talk to you?
Yeah. Well, and then they talk to me like, oh my God, you're not as scary as I thought at all.
Yeah.
No, I've been around big dudes like you all my life, right? And you don't scare me.
No,
not at all.
No.
And, you know, if anything, it's an absolute blessing to actually get to know you a little bit better and to know you. It's an honor to know you.
Thank you. It's an honor to know you. It's an honor to be here with you now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, I want to thank you for listening, if you're listening live or if you're listening in the future. But like I say, before, I tried to unwind here, but now I'm going to unwind and call it the night here. But I really want to thank you for listening. And I really hope we both, Nathan and myself, have instilled some hope in you that you can get past this. You can recover from childhood sexual abuse. You know, you can find better ways of coping instead of destroying yourself.
Mm.
I have, and Nathan has. Mm-hmm. And if you go back and listen to a bunch of my other shows in the past, you'll find a bunch of other people have done the exact same thing. And not just men, women too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sexuality makes no difference. Your ethnic background makes no difference.
Religion makes no difference.
None of that comes into form whatsoever when you come into this house. You could be from the moon for all the gatehouse cares, as long as you come in here and no one's going to discriminate against you, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Even if you come from Mars, we're not going to discriminate you.
No. Yeah. Right? How'd you get here?
Hey, if I come back,
there's got to be a story here.
There's got to be a story here. But the point being is there's no discrimination here regardless of your sexuality, religion, anything. And that's the beautiful thing about coming in here, because when we come in here and we do our groups, and when we talk in an open forum like we do, if you talk anything negative about all those things I said, then you be gone, because this is a safe place.
Yep.
And regardless of your experience or what you like or dislike, it does not matter. It's about what you we've been through. Come in here to heal and, you know, get on with your life,
mm-hmm.
right? But none of that comes into play here. And that's the beautiful thing about coming in here, is you can come in here and regardless of who you are,
just be yourself.
Just be, well,
that's it.
Learn to be yourself,
yeah.
right? Learn to be yourself,
yeah.
right?
And discover yourself.
Discover yourself.
There you go.
Right? You know, transformation is a wonderful thing. And that's why I call the show Personal Transformation, because every time I do this, something's different. It gets better and better and better and better.
I would argue that it's you who's going through the personal transformation.
Okay.
Let's get deep.
Folks, have a wonderful weekend. And remember, self-care. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, or Old Etobicoke, as I always say, 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West. The Gatehouse website, thegatehouse.org, gives a whole list of all the programs we do. We have downloads there for information, so all kinds of information, resources is what I'm trying to say. We have all kinds of resources there, if, you know, serving the greater Toronto area and the world, if you wish. For this information, it costs you totally nothing to download it, by the way,
mm-hmm.
and all this information that we have. Have a great weekend, because it is Thursday. Actually, tomorrow's Friday. Oh, wow, where'd the week go? Have a great weekend, but remember, self-care. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure, man. Love you.
Thank you.
That's
love
great.
You too.
Folks, take care, and I'll talk to you next week. Good night. And that's all there is to it.